This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin, and we're here with another exciting episode of the Toastmasters Podcast. Toastmasters founder Dr. Ralph Smedley once said that we learn best in moments of enjoyment. Now, for me, moments of enjoyment are often when I have a good laugh. So today's guest is just perfect to help us laugh and help us find some of our funny, because he's someone who makes a living doing just that and more. Our guest today is Stefan Dyer. He's a global comedian, TEDx speaker, and speaking coach with over 300 performances, sold-out comedy workshops, and sometimes in more than one language under his belt. He is the proud co-founder of Malpensando, a bilingual school that helps people become funny, confident speakers. Stefan has been recognized with numerous awards and accolades, including Latin Comedian of the Year by Latin Awards Canada. He received Second Cities Diversity Fellowship. That's a full scholarship, and was invited to Malaysia to deliver a TEDx talk. In 2019, he performed at Comedy Central Fest in Mexico City, and just months later filmed his first one-hour comedy special in Toronto, Canada. And how Stefan arrived on our radar? Well, he was interviewed and quoted in the February 2021 issue of the Toastmaster magazine in Beth Black's article, The Formula for Funny. Stefan has been a Toastmaster since 2012 and a member of the Bay Street Breakfast Toastmasters Club. Stefan Dyer, welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast.
Thank you so much, Greg. This is an absolute pleasure and honor. I am so happy. Please, I'm your guest. Ask whatever you want, my friend.
Now, Stefan, before we ask you to impart some of your humor wisdom on the audience, I want to just talk a little bit about you. And with respect, is actually really funny in itself. It's hilarious that your whole comedy career happened by accident. In fact, you stumbled upon it at your Toastmasters Club, and a morning club nonetheless, when people are not often laughing or in funny moods. Tell us a little bit about that journey.
Yes, I always say to my friends at Bay Street Breakfast Club Toronto, we meet Wednesdays at 7:30 in the morning. I always tell them that if you can make it at Bay Street, you can make it anywhere, because making people laugh at 7:30 in the morning is not easy. And what happened to me as I started going to these meetings in 2012 is that my speeches, as you know, back in the day, the Competent Communicator Manual, your first 10 speeches, you weren't necessarily supposed to do humorous speeches. And I wasn't actually doing humorous speeches, but people were laughing. And they were telling me, like, you're funny, you should do stand-up. In fact, I joined because one day in my wildest dreams, I wished that one day I could do a 5-minute stand-up comedy set. The more I did speeches, the more I convinced myself that I had something going. I started doing sketch comedy videos online. On Vine, that's the TikTok for old people. Now it's dead. Vine doesn't exist anymore. And people, like, my video started going viral. And then people kept telling me in the evaluations in the Toastmasters meetings that I should consider it. So in 2014, I tried it for the first time. And it's been a wild journey.
Now, you said people were laughing at you or laughing with you, regardless as to what project you were working on. Can you recall anything specific, some kind of speech you were doing, or maybe the topic or the title, and what was it that people were laughing about?
Yes, I remember that in 2012, I'd gone through a breakup and I went with a friend to Las Vegas for the first time. I was just making fun of myself because for the first time I was single in a couple of years. I thought I was going to go to Las Vegas and live a crazy life, but I was just a loner. I wasn't getting anything. Like, I wasn't too successful in the clubs. And I was just being real and authentic. I was excited to be single, but was unsuccessful at it. So I was just telling people, and people were laughing. The first speech that I did at International Speech Contest was, "Help, I need a roommate." I basically made everyone laugh in the international speech contest and made it to the third or fourth round. I don't remember. One of the feedbacks that I got was that the international speech contest wasn't supposed to be that funny. And I was making people laugh anyways. That was like a pretty big indication for me that whatever I was doing, I just couldn't help myself with my tonality or my structure to just make people laugh. And pauses as well, body language, facial expressions, everything plays in, but I was doing it naturally. So what I decided was I needed to go read some books. And I was so proud and happy that you interviewed Judy Carter on this podcast, because that's how I started, with her books. And then I joined workshops at Second City, and I just started improving along the way.
Now, while you said you were hoping that you could do a little 5-minute, you weren't really destined for comedy. In fact, instead of a dimly lit comedy club, you were actually destined for C-suite in a big skyscraper, right?
Yes. I started working in wealth management. In fact, I started working in financial institutions writing credits in 2010 as an intern. And then along the way, I got promoted to manager. Then I got promoted to senior manager as I joined the wealth management team for Latin America. Obviously, stationed here in Toronto. Within that building, Scotia Plaza, which is a huge building here in downtown Toronto in the financial district, I was doing really well. Like, my parents were super happy. I was a golden boy. I was actually one of the youngest senior managers in the entire company. I was 26 or 25 when I got my first senior manager role. Like, the rest of the people were 10, 20, sometimes 30 years older than me. It was a big decision. As I started getting better and I started getting more offers, I just felt like it was screaming at me. Luckily, I had my current business partner and best friend. His name is Juan. He's the co-founder and my business partner in Malpensando, our public speaking and comedy school here in Toronto. And we both were senior managers at Scotiabank. We were both friends before that. We both tried stand-up comedy for the first time together. And we ended up quitting together, the bank, at the same time. So we quit in April of 2017, and we just went on a 3-week tour through Miami, Costa Rica, and Colombia. It sounds like pretty glamorous, but it was a questionable decision, because I had saved up some money so that I could at least take a year to do what I loved full time and see if it was going to work out or not. But I was just like spending the money touring and learning from better comedians in Latin America. I mean, it was really cool, but it was also nerve-wracking because I had quit a very successful and lucrative bank job in line with my field of study. I studied finance at the University of Toronto. A big opportunity cost, but one that definitely has been extremely fulfilling and humbling.
It sounds like you're having the last laugh, because I could just imagine, mama, papa, I'm trading in my suit for t-shirt and jeans.
Exactly. I was just talking to my wife yesterday, and we're like, should we donate my business shirts, like my bank shirts and my ties and my suits? Because I just keep them just in case I ever go back to working at an office. But it's been 4 years, and it doesn't look like I'm going back anytime soon. So I don't know. I may just donate them. But you know what the thing, you know what happens? It's like the Murphy's Law. You donate them and then you immediately need them, you know? I don't know if it's bad luck, because I feel like if I donate them or I give them away or I throw them out, I'm going to immediately go back to a bank job or a corporate job.
Well, you can either keep one or two, or just maybe wear the suit jacket with some jeans. Or
yeah, no, I'm definitely going to donate them. I got other stuff that I use now, or that I would use now if I ever go back to a corporate job.
Yeah. I mean, you never look back. When I first started reading about you, I connected immediately, and I can just so relate, because 3 decades ago, I quit a lucrative IT position in a financial institution, not the same bank that you work for, went out on my own, and I never looked back. I just never looked back. Now, I'm not doing a lot of comedy. Occasionally, I get a laugh or two on the Toastmasters podcast, but nonetheless, an entrepreneur at heart. We know a little bit about you. Let's talk a little bit about maybe finding the funny or finding the formula for the funny. Now, we can talk about finding it in our speeches and in our material, but I'm also thinking right now, we know what the global situation is, and funny may not be on the minds of most people. In fact, I think most people probably want to forget 2020. What are some of the things that you think that people can do to find that smile or find some of their funny going forward in 2021?
First of all, I think it's important to understand what humor is, what comedy is, and then you can search it, because a lot of people think that you're just born with it. As a growth mindset person, I'm a firm believer, especially after having taught hundreds of students in my public speaking through comedy courses, you can learn how to be funny. Some people are introverts, and actually introverts do a lot better in our courses.
Really?
In fact, the majority of stand-up comedians, and I've done comedy in like 9 countries, I've been on Comedy Central, I've met like hundreds of comedians. The majority are introverts. People think that you're just born with it, you can't really learn it. A lot of these people aren't even funny in their own friendship circles. My family doesn't think I'm funny. So you can learn it. You can learn it. So what is comedy? Comedy is truth and pain. That's all it is. Another way to see it is tragedy plus time. In other words, if enough time has gone by from something that causes pain for you, like or a tragic event, you can laugh at it. Obviously, if I got divorced yesterday, I'm not going to be laughing at it because it's too close to me right now. Probably going to be crying. But after a couple months, yeah, I'm going to be laughing at it. Maybe 2 years, whatever is enough for me. It's important to understand what it is, and then you can pursue it. You can understand it, and then you can start looking at things that you can laugh at. Another way to see it is truth and pain. So if you see stand-up comedians or any type of comedian on stage, they're not saying, oh, my life is perfect, I got like 19 Ferraris and 25 mansions. No, because people hate that person. People hate perfect people. Nobody wants or expects you to be perfect. In fact, we always say in our courses, authenticity over perfection. What people remember, like Maya Angelou said, is people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. And how you connect with people is through vulnerability. Relationships advance at the speed of vulnerability. They move at the speed of vulnerability. When you go up on stage and you say how miserable you are because this, or how sad you are because of this, or because you got cheated on, or because you put on 25 pounds over the Christmas break, or because you fell, that's when people connect with you, because it's relatable. When you say something that is relatable and people can connect to it, that's the truth aspect of the equation. Oh yeah, that happened to me too. That's true. It's relatable. It's funny because it's true. So that's the truth part. Mm-hmm. And then the pain is when you see someone's pain and you hear it, but like it's cool to laugh at it. So it's not like somebody died. It's like, okay, it's pain that is okay to laugh at, especially because they're sharing it with you on a stage. And that's the pain aspect of it. It happens to us. 2020 was a horrible year for many people. But maybe in a month, or maybe in a decade, or maybe in 13 years, we're going to be able to look back and laugh at it. It's about, yes, taking your job seriously, but not taking yourself too seriously.
Interesting. So in terms of trying to find that smile, should they be thinking now? Because right now, you know, people have been having challenges in 2020, or even we're now in 2021. Some of them are going through those challenges right now, especially with a lot of people being in lockdown.
Yes.
Is there a way? When do you start?
Well, what I would recommend is watch movies, watch stand-up, because if you're just by yourself in your home, it's hard to laugh at yourself if you're just by yourself. It always helps to be with people so that you can share your story, so you can connect with an audience. And some people think that audiences has to be like 200 people. No, an audience is one person. An audience is 5 people. If you can't have an audience, then watch movies, watch stand-up, go to Netflix, listen to podcasts, like comedy podcasts. And it's literally therapeutic. You feel better. It's cathartic. And you feel lighter.
And that laughter is so contagious, right? Once you start watching something and you say, oh, remember that time we did this when we were kids? Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, exactly. And then if they say, yeah, I did that too, that's the truth part of the equation. It's really simple, but it's also hard to find sometimes. That's why you have to go and watch a lot of stand-up, watch a lot of movies, and then you see what type of humor you love. My first teacher at Second City, my first stand-up comedy instructor at Second City, always said that what's so special about comedy is that you go to a comedy club and you see like 9 different types of comedy. It's basically like he would always compare it to going to a concert and looking at, and listening to jazz, punk rock, metal, pop, tango, flamenco, like merengue, bachata, salsa, reggaeton, everything. So it's super cool because there's so many different types of comedy, and that's why you got Netflix or YouTube to go and check it out and see what types of comedians you love. If you kind of know what you like but you don't know who to watch, then you got to message me on Instagram and I'll tell you who to go watch, and I'm pretty good at that.
Sounds good. So humor and laughter and comedy as a healing method, not just necessarily for material. I think that's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, in our courses, we get a lot of people with extreme anxiety, with bipolar disease, or with other mental health issues or challenges. And it's not that they go away, because I would be lying to you. But you learn how to cope with it. You learn how to laugh at yourself. And you learn how to embrace your own challenges, your own weaknesses or whatever. They're not really weaknesses. We always say that perceive your weaknesses as opportunities. Because in comedy, like I just said, comedy is truth and pain. So if you have something like a condition or a challenge or a weakness or whatever you think is bugging you, for Latinos, it's a lot of the times it's like their accents. And I talk a lot about getting lost in translation in my comedy. When we talk to our students, we always say, yeah, maybe in your whole life, this was a weakness or an obstacle. But from now on, especially on a stage, you'll use it in your favor as an opportunity, and you'll make people laugh. It'll be therapeutic. And believe it or not, along the way, because you're voicing these things on a stage, you're giving a voice to those people who have lost it. So it's very remarkable what you can do on a stage by sharing these things that are weaknesses. You can connect with people on so many levels and empower them.
You just reminded me of something that happened. I had the honor of helping to charter a Spanish bilingual club here at Edmonton. And I don't speak Spanish. I speak English and I speak French. And I still remember the one day I was a Toastmaster. I wanted to say the word speaker in Spanish. So of course I Googled it. And of course the word for speaker is orador, but I said altavoz. I was referring to a speaker, like a speaker in the ceiling or a sound speaker.
Yeah.
And because a lot of what I do is related to being a gadget guy, people thought I was actually making a joke. And in fact, I was actually using the wrong words. Before we go today, what I really would love to do is, when you talked about some of the things that happened when you were giving your speeches, you mentioned things like misdirection, comparisons, irony, exaggeration. I'm just wondering if you could maybe pull back the curtain a little bit and share maybe a couple of the humor tactics that you use in your presentations or in your teachings that you use to connect your audience and maybe make them laugh.
Yeah. So those tools that you just used, there's tens of them, and Judy Carter's book has them all in our courses. We teach them also. Misdirection is the easiest one. So it's basically like pulling the rug from someone. So basically through your sentence and your narrative, you guide people to assume something. Then your punch says something that they're not expecting. And that's basically comedy 101. People laugh when something is a surprise when they don't expect it. So for example, I open up my shows in English or Spanish and I go, hi, my name is Stefan Dyer and I'm Costa Rican, or as most people call us here in Canada, Mexican. Okay. So basically you would think that like you're expecting something else. That's misdirection. Or sometimes I go, I'm an eternal immigrant. I was born in Costa Rica, but my parents are Peruvian. I also lived in El Salvador, Mexico, Montreal, and Toronto, all because of my dad's job. My dad's a drug lord. So basically, you expect me to say a normal profession, like my dad is a diplomat or a lawyer or a businessman. But when I say drug lord, it sparks some laughter because people don't expect it. So that's misdirection. Obviously, these are one-liners, so they're shorter jokes, but misdirection works in many ways. It could be a longer bit. Comparison is very easy. You just compare something. The normal part of the equation is the setup. So you compare something, you say something that people already know and that it's believable. So for example, I have a bit that goes, finding a job in Canada is hard. In North America, it's super hard because Canadians are super specific in their interview questions. For example, they always ask, do you have an MBA? I studied finance and they always ask you acronyms in interviews. So they're like, do you have an MBA? Do you have a CFA? Do you have a CA? Do you have a PMP? Do you have a PhD? And I was like, well, as a kid, I had ADD. At night, I watch HBO and MTV. And in Toronto, I take the TTC. And I also listen to AC/DC. The comparison part is what you understand and expect, and it's believable. Do you have an MBA? Do you have a PhD? And then you contrast it to something. That's a comparison with a little bit of misdirection too. For example, in interviews, Canadians are very specific. They're very professional. You ask a Canadian, what do you do? And they answer specific. I'm a graphic designer. One or two words max. You ask another Canadian, what do you do? I'm an engineer. But immigrants, us Latinos, we can't answer like that. You ask a Latino, what do you do? And we go, what are you looking for, my friend? We can help you. It doesn't exist. We can invent it, my friend. So that's basically comparison. You compare a Canadian with a Latino. Then because there's so many tools, you would have to read the book or join one of our courses. But those are the ones that I use mostly. Comparison, misdirection, and then exaggeration, where you just pretty much exaggerate. But you start from a place that is believable. So you can't start exaggerating from a place that is not believable because then people are not buying it. The most precious gift that you have on stage is your credibility. You can exaggerate and do something that is not believable in the punch, which is when people laugh. But in the setup of the joke, which is the context, it's very important that it's believable and informational so that people are following along. And then when the punch comes along, then you can exaggerate, maybe lie a little bit, and that's what causes the laughter.
That's awesome. That's a really, really good start. And of course, Judy also recently released the new version. I guess it's the new Comedy Bible. For those of you listening, you may or may not be aware, is that Toastmasters introduced an 11th path. I think it was about 2 years ago, in addition to the original 10, and it's called Engaging Humor. So I encourage you to sign up for that one. I actually have signed up for that as my second path, and I'm currently just starting level 2.
Nice.
So as our conversation comes to a close, and it's too bad because I just want to laugh some more, perhaps you can let us know what you're up to, how people can find out more about you, and what they can do if they want to learn more about what you're doing.
Yes, thank you, Greg. So basically, because the world has changed so much in the last year, and at least in Canada, we are in a lockdown right now and the comedy clubs are closed. And obviously, you don't want to get people to gather around and expose anyone. We have been doing everything online. I basically perform a lot online for companies. We currently have a show called Can You Hear Me Now? About the pandemic, working from home, kids in virtual school at home, traveling, staycations, family. And I'm doing a lot for companies, consulting companies, Ernst & Young, Scotiabank, BMO. We're also teaching our public speaking through comedy courses. You can find them on malpensando.com. And they are 7-week courses where you learn to conquer the fear of public speaking through comedy. You learn 25 tips and techniques, how to connect with an audience through humor, how to improve your stage presence, how to control the nerves. And we just added something to the syllabus, which is how to do virtual presentations effectively. And at the end of the 7 weeks, you get to do your first 5 minutes of a humorous speech. In other words, stand-up comedy. And you think it's not that special virtually, but you'd be impressed. It's only 12 people in the group, and you become really tight. Lots of laughter. It's only once a week that we meet up for 7 weeks. So you can contact me at malpensando.com, or you can just reach me at Stefan Dyer on Instagram.
Well, that sounds great. And it sounds like this would be really great to do in conjunction with starting your pathway of engaging humor. We'll put links to everything you talked about in the show notes, as well as a link to your TEDx talk. And folks, I also encourage you to check out the article, Beth Black's article, The Formula for Funny, in the February 2021 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. Stefan Dyer, thank you so much for helping us tickle our funny bone and doing your best to help us find the funny.
I really appreciate it, Greg. It's been an honor. And I always tell people when they ask me, should I join a course or should I join Toastmasters? And I say both. Joining a course is great, but Toastmasters is the best long-term investment you can do. Great leadership skills, great public speaking skills, and incredible supportive evaluations in an incredible environment where you can just be yourself and learn how to present and connect better with all kinds of audiences. Man, getting out of your comfort zone is the best gift you can give yourself.
Stefan Dyer, it's been an absolute pleasure and a good laugh.
Thank you, Greg. Take care.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.